Oh, yeah. Friday Eve, New York City. Does it feel good? Yeah, get your Friday Eve on. It's Mark Farrell. It's the Progressive Radio Network. Great show coming your way. You're going to meet a woman, an indomitable spirit. Nothing stands in her way. She's accomplished so much in her life. Remember the soap Guiding Light? She was the star Lucy Cooper. Beautiful, very, very talented woman, actress, film, stage as well. Speaker, former NSA, National Speakers Association, New York City president. She's now the founder of Motisize, a cutting-edge exercise program, Fit Mind, Fit Body. And she's going to be here to tell us about that. And what really kind of brought her full circle from having a eating disorder as a young woman to being the star of a soap star, and more. So I had the pleasure on Monday night, I think this may be the 10th time, and it was actually the 10th annual Laugh for a Sight at Gotham Comedy Club here in New York City. And what a night it was. Wow. Packed house and some great, great artists there. Artie Lang, of course. Artie has some incredible material about being a convicted convict, everything. Robert Klein, Gilbert Gottfried. Robert Klein, I don't think, has had new material in a decade, but still his presence on stage, pretty powerful. Gilbert Gottfried, he, hands down, was the most offensive comedian there to the blind and visually impaired. At the same time, virtually hysterical. He just came on and said, "I don't care about you effing blind folks. I just came here because of the free food and free car service. Yeah, I'm donating my time, but I don't give a shit about you guys." And his obviously unique Gilbert Gottfried voice. So anyway, Laugh for Sight is an organization founded by Brian Fischler to raise monies to fight degenerative retinal diseases like macular degeneration, RP, and so many more. And he gives those funds to, I think, University of Pennsylvania. I can't remember off the top of my head, for their leading science program in this area, and also, I believe, a guide dog organization. So also, Brian is a comedian himself and takes the stage. He's the first one on every year with his guide dog, Nash, and he really hit it out of the park, and he's come a long way as a comedian. He was always good, but now he's on the verge of being great. So my hat's off to Brian for many different reasons. Number one, being a comedian is tough in general. Getting up on stage with prepared material, with the sole purpose to make people laugh, is extremely challenging, daunting, scary, and many other adjectives, and hard, very, very difficult, and he does it. And with that point, we're going to meet in a few minutes a comedian I met on Monday night, an aspiring comedian, Zane Burney, who's in a crowd. I actually was sitting next to Zane and his father because I was hosting, and I would be going up and down on stage. So instead of trying to get through a dark audience, I kind of propped myself in a seat, and I would put some material on their table. So I started into speaking with them, introducing myself, and I found out he is a budding comedian. But unfortunately, I can't believe the timing of this, I did not see Zane perform, because I would have to go out into the hallway and just talk to some of the comedians, et cetera, just kind of, you know, things you do when you're producing an event of that. So I came back in and found out that Zane went up on stage. I'm like, are you kidding me? You're a college student, you're legally blind, and they just pulled you up on stage? How did I miss this? Oh, my God. Anyway, so you're going to meet Zane in a few minutes. But I just want to talk to you about the event, because on many, many levels, it's what, like, the power of social media, the power of caring is all about. Because when you bring people together, of course, there are great names. Rich Voss was another comedian. I think Barney McFarlane and one or two more comedians that are slipping my mind right now. So it was a stellar lineup. There was a silent auction beforehand. As a matter of fact, I was saying to myself, I didn't do this material on stage, but now, okay, if this was a charity event for the deaf and hearing impaired, would it be called a silent auction? Or would it be called a sighted auction? Who knows? Anyway. So, but it was great to see all these people to come together. And the paraphernalia that was at the silent auction donated from many, many various aspects. Restaurants, sports memorabilia, Giants gear, Eli Manning which probably didn't go over too well because the day before they lost terribly to the New England Patriots. But we moved on, haven't we? Possibly. Anyway, Laugh for Sight, 10th anniversary, 10 years strong, raised tens and tens and tens of thousands of dollars for a great cause. And it's just really, really great to see that someone of this caliber, a budding, aspiring comedian back then, 10 years ago, Brian Fisher, has actually grown to this level. And his effort to raise money, critical funds, has been so successful. And I appreciate his interest in having me host for all these years. And hosting an event like this is really neat because you get to go into the crowd, have a lot of fun. Of course, you have to do a lot of plugging of all the different auction items, etc. But what I did was something a little bit different last night. I prepared a little bit of material. Usually I go up with just kind of like a blank slate, a lot of field bullet points I want to get across and things I have to mention as hosting any job you have to do. But I did a little bit of a shtick or two, about three of them actually, but one of them was caught on tape, and I'd like to play a little bit of it for you right now. The audio quality isn't the best, but hang in there and maybe turn up the volume a bit.
So, how you feeling, New York? You ready to laugh your ass off?
Yeah!
Absolutely. We're going to commence this night in just a few minutes, but I just had an unusual situation. Understandably, there's a lot of guide dogs here tonight. And one of them, he asked me not to mention his name, but he said, "Will you please tell these assholes to watch out for us guys? You know, we're out of line of sight. We're kind of, you know, going below the perimeter, hanging out, and then you guys are serving alcohol on top of this. I got my paws just done over at Spa Bell like 2 hours ago for this event. I don't want my manicure and pedicure, you know, tarnished. So watch out for the guide dogs." But then very quickly, you gave me thought to, like, where do you think you read the bubbles over guide dogs' head? What do you think they're saying? I mean, like, you know, hey, asshole, who do you think's going to walk me around when I lose my vision? Right? Like, hey, you think my farts are bad? Dude, yours are way worse. And the thing that probably dogs think of the most, guide dogs, is probably, hey, you trust me all day long, right, to walk you to work, every place you go. But when I have to go pee or take a dump, you insist on walking me outside to a hydrant you can't see. Right? Isn't that ridiculous? Our real comedians are coming up shortly. Have a good time.
Yeah. So I gave him my best. That was it. But there are actually some other pieces that we didn't get on video that were actually better. I'm not just saying that because we don't have them, but they were. But anyway, it gives me pause to think about, you know, to get up on a legendary stage like Gotham Comedy Club in New York City on 23rd Street and to in front of all these like powerhouse comedians is intimidating. But nonetheless, as my a lot of my talks kind of encourage people to do, try something new. Don't let anything stop you. Propel yourself forward in this world. You know, whatever adversity stands in your way, whatever fears, whatever thing, anything that's frightening or stopping you, just let it go, man. And on that note, as I mentioned to you before, Zane Burney, I met that young comedian, budding comedian. He's in college. He's studying communication right now. And he joins us via the phone because I think he just woke up about 30 minutes ago. Zane, how are you?
Very good. How's it going, Mark?
Good. Did you hear that bit I did?
Yes, I did.
Would you give it a thumbs up?
I really applaud you for getting up on stage yourself.
Now, as a legally blind comedian, you're what, 18, 19 years of age?
I'm actually 20.
20. Good for you. You're getting old.
20 a couple months ago.
You're going to be rolling into the old fogies home soon.
I can't wait.
What's the most difficult aspect for you for being a comedian that happens to be legally blind?
Right now, the most difficult aspect is probably balancing. It's not even the legally blindness as you think. It's just really balancing the idea of being in school and doing, and then trying to do what I want at the same time. So, yeah.
All right. So we can get past that because that's just a scheduling thing and, you know, getting your life together, et cetera. But the actual comedic aspect, is it the physical space, logistically being on stage? Is it not seeing the audience, or is that a good thing?
I would say that's a good thing because there are too many comics who actually rely on crowd work and just make that their entire set. I'm not going to name any names in particular because there is good, you know, there's a lot of good to be said in crowd work.
Sure.
But honestly, the most difficult part is actually finding a club sometimes.
Well, I imagine that you have someone ride you there, drive you there, correct?
Correct. My father is typically driving me there. There are times where I will just take the train into the city myself, and then I'm pretty much on my own for finding it, but usually get done. So well, people are very helpful.
Well, you know, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, I couldn't believe, number one, that you were able to get up on stage. How cool was that of Brian Fisher to say, hey, get up on stage with some greats in comedy? You know, obviously you were outside waiting for these guys to talk to them, to get their autographs, and yet you shared a stage with them. And how did that make you feel?
Believe me, I was dazed after. I couldn't even believe what just happened.
Good for you. That's it? Come on, you got to have more to say than that.
I do have more to say. There's actually a little bit of a backstory to that. So Craig Carton was one of the main hosts of mm-hmm. that show, and he's off of WFAN, and he used to work for 101.5 in New Jersey.
Correct.
Now, about 10 years ago, I was on 101.5 doing, and I don't quite know what it was. It was basically an interview, but I wasn't really anyone yet. Mm-hmm. So it was more of I was a fan of their show, and they let me come on.
Sure.
And so at the beginning of Last Recite, my dad said, hey, you know, let's go talk to Craig and see, essentially network. Try and network
sure,
with Craig.
Absolutely. Why not?
See what happened. And we walked up to him, explained all the comics, said I was on his show back when he was with
Rossi. Ray Rossi,
on 101.5. Yeah. Yeah. And Craig's like, all right, you're a comic. Give me 2 minutes of material. He's like, I'll bring you up on stage. Give me 2 minutes. Let's see what you got.
Did he give you, you given the sample of what you had or no?
He didn't even have me give a sample.
He just trusted
very,
you.
Yeah.
Wow. I never would have trusted you. Well, you know what? This is not a sample from Monday night's performance at Gotham Comedy Club for the 10th anniversary of Laugh Recite, but this is an example of Zane Burney. And it's coming.
And
so as you can see, I can't. And real quick, this is actually called a cane. A lot of people call it the wrong thing. Like, I once had a guy call it a pointer. I'm legally blind. What the hell am I going to point at? Be like, there's a duck. Where? I don't know. What are you asking me for? Yeah. Legally blind is a weird name. Like, I actually sit back and think about that now. Was there ever a time in society when blindness was illegal? Bunch of people getting high off blind? You know, politicians are like, all right, we got to put a stop to this. This is ridiculous. Can't have people walking into stuff all willy-nilly. So from now on, blindness is illegal. Then, like, you'd be walking down the street and you hear, and I'm in. When I'm about to blind.
Now, that's some great material there, my friend.
Thank you.
Zane Burney, thank live on much. PRN. Hey, hey, hey. Good stuff, man. So you sound very confident. You sound pretty seasoned. And you sound, and don't take this wrong way, because coming from one visually impaired guy to another visually impaired guy, you sound completely 1,000% not disabled. And I say that only because of how difficult this particular job is of being a comedian and not having sight of the audience and just the pure palpable vibe of an audience either responding or not responding is gargantuan.
Right. It is. And a lot of the times, you know, I guess it just comes down to really getting up on stage and then not worrying about what's going to happen
sure.
next.
I mean, this is who
because
you are.
A lot of people with issues come. You know, like, it's a common fact that the majority of people, their biggest fear within life is public speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I can see that to some extent, but the reality is it just comes down to actually forcing yourself to do something, or not really forcing yourself, but bringing yourself
what's one
to
of
do
your-
something.
Zane, what's one of your biggest fears? Stepping off the stage and falling into a margarita glass?
Actually, one of my general fears is that what people find in the future will become less and less, or as funny, will become less and less intelligent. But that's a side note.
Well, that's a very intelligent concern of yours, and that actually says a lot about who you are. And we have to realize that comedians are comedians for many, many reasons. Look at the lineup. Artie Lang from the other night. Artie had a very, very troubled life and still does. He's obviously in rehab for NA, I think, and AA as well. Robert Klein is probably the intelligent man's comedian. Gilbert Gottfried. But you look at all these different comedians and all these greats. They have, a lot of them, sometimes a checkered past. Grew up in a very, very challenging family circumstances, or didn't have a family, and this is their way to vent. This is their therapy on stage. And sometimes the more screwed up they are, the more successful they are. So I circle back to say that Zane Bernie, my guest right here on PRN.FM, at age 15, started comedy because of why, Zane? Of love. Of flesh. Trying to impress a girl. Tell me about this girl. And this was in the Iona St. Thomas. Born in New Jersey, but of course you wanted to be funny in St. Thomas. Why the hell you came back, I never know, but that's, we'll save that for another time. So tell me about why you wanted to impress this girl.
So many times.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's working for you. So tell me about how this comedic part of you revealed itself.
Well, essentially, it was a school talent show coming up. I guess somehow I got it in my head that I actually wanted to perform something but didn't know what.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the time, I was watching a lot of Bill Hicks and Mitch Hedberg videos, so I was thinking, oh, maybe I could do stand-up. They make it look so easy, like that old thing.
They do, sure.
And I like jotted down some bullet points on my computer, stuff I wanted to talk about, and then essentially just like walked up on stage, complete wreck, and had like this 5 minutes of bullet point material, but it wasn't even material. It's just like me basically going off the top of my head, seeing what I can figure, what I can do. It was like trivial stuff, talking about like gym class and homework and spear fishing and whatever else I could think of.
Uh-huh.
So they're just all in an effort to impress some chick who ended up moving off island anyway.
Did it work?
Yeah.
Good.
And just turned it into a career over time. Started hitting the open mics around island, and then started doing like these bar shows where I perform in between bands, which I love doing because I collect tips after. It was so much fun.
Fantastic. So do you ever bump into people, even though you may not, you may feel them or feel their vibe or whatever, just to get an extra buck or two? Play it up a little bit. Come on, Zane. It's just you and I listening, talking here. Come on. You got to work the crowd, right? It's great material. So now, as a college student, I mean, you, obviously your whole repertoire can't revolve around being blind. It can always come back to that somehow. But I would imagine someone who's 20 years of age has a lot of interesting material, certainly in the college years. And also you can play on life not lived yet, but life that you suspect you'll live, and maybe life you can't live, or because of what society perceives that a legally blind person can't accomplish, but you can.
Right. Like a lot of the times I'll talk about, for example, I also work on radio, Bronc Radio 107.
Well, that's your biggest mistake in life so far.
No, I love every minute of it.
So do I, my friend.
So like I'll talk about the fact that I work on the promotion team, playing, basically, we have one of those Plinko boards from The Price is Right,
mm-hmm.
and we'll play that at every event.
Okay.
And I'll talk about doing that with my buddies, or, you know, just general observations about stuff. Just because I like the idea of, although I'm very inspired by Mitch Hedberg, so I love the idea of saying absurd things just to get a reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, also talking about classes, the fact that I don't really put that much effort towards my classes. I feel bad about that sometimes.
And it's reflected in your grade, right?
Not always.
I'm just busting your chops, Zane. Hey, Zane, well, you know what? I'm going to let you go because it sounds like you got one eye open on a pillow there, and maybe some twins from a frat party from the night before next to you. But anyway, lastly, Bo.
You don't know the half of it.
No, I don't. You're going to have to tweet it out. But lastly, why comedy? I know it's to impress a girl. How does it make you feel?
Comedy Okay, so doing stand-up turns into being like a drug, where once you have stage time, you have to get more.
Yeah.
At least if you're involved with it. Like, if you're actually legitimately serious about it, it becomes a drug. Comedy, why don't we do comedy? Because I can never be a musician. I've tried, it didn't work. So, really, if I wasn't legally blind, I'd probably be in the military or doing construction with my father. So.
So comedy, you heard it from Zane Bernie, is crack to him.
Yep.
Well, continue with that crack, my friend. You're going to live a long and prosperous life on stage at the young age of 20, just hearing your material on YouTube. Again, I can't believe that I missed it on Monday night. But anyway, you saw some great comedy, and I'm sure your father couldn't be any more proud of you, you and your mom.
Thank you very much, Mark.
Bernie, or Zane, all the best to you. You have a presence on Facebook, so everybody on PRN, check out Zane Bernie. That's ZaneBirne. And with a name like Zane, you are destined for success, right, in comedy.
Thank you very much.
And don't forget to crack a book once in a while. All right, Zane, take it easy. PRN-FM continues with Insight in just a moment, and next we're going to meet an incredible woman, actress, speaker, and the founder of Motosize. What's Motosize? Stay tuned.
It's not liberal. It's not conservative. It's progressive. The truth that empowers. Right here on PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
This is journalist Dave Lindorf. I'll be hosting the show This Can't Be Happening each Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on PRN.FM. Because we know it is happening, each week's program will feature some issue that's been getting ignored or misreported, like Social Security, climate change, military spending, or the government's destruction of the Internet. Please join me at This Can't Be Happening on Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern.
Does the current dire state of the economy have you totally upset and confused? There are solutions to our financial ills, but first we have to get a handle on what's really going on. I'm Ellen Brown, author of Web of Debt and a new radio show host here on PRN-FM, inviting you to join me and my co-host, Walt McCree, as we look behind the curtain at the shadowy world of global monetary control and what we can do to break ourselves free. The show is called It's Our Money, and it airs on Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern. We'll be talking with experts in the world of monetary policy, as well as with people who are actively working to reclaim control of public money to benefit the public interest. So please join us for It's Our Money, Wednesdays on PRN, FM, or by podcast.
Gary Null's incisive documentary and informational films on today's most crucial issues have won dozens of international awards. As a free service to listeners, acclaimed films such as War on Health and Seeds of Death are available to watch in their entirety online. Just go to YouTube and search for Gary Null. Thank you for your continued support.
Hi everyone, I'm John Mueller from The Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want to know what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America, tune in twice a week and get it from the horse's mouth, from someone like me who's had boots on the ground down here for over 20 years. Latin America is one of the only places left in the world where you can still live a first world life on a measly Social Security check. And with the first world imploding like it is, everybody needs a plan B. So, tune in every Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time and every Sunday at 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time for The Expat Files, Living in Latin America.
Thank you for listening to PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
It's the BRONX. You know what's next.
It's a bowl of soul. Tune in
in and get your dose of classic soul and independent R&B music from the United States and abroad on Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. A Bowl of Soul is a music experience you won't forget or regret. Check out A Bowl of Soul on the Progressive Radio Network.
Stay tuned to PRN.FM for more empowering ideas from Progressive Voices. We're moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
All right, all right, all right. It's Mark Farrell, show's Insight on PRN, the Progressive Radio Network. Phone calls are always welcome, 888-874-4888. Especially if you want to speak to our next guest, which I'm sure you will, 888-874-4888. Any soap stars? Does anyone watch soaps anymore? Well, when they were on, they were huge, of course. And Guiding Light was probably the leading soap for many, many years. Do you remember an actress, Sonia Satra? Do you remember Lucy Cooper? Well, she's in the studio, both of them. And actually, I'm going to break it to you. It's the same person. My first guest, or my second guest today, I had the privilege of meeting a few years ago when I hosted the Hoboken International Film Festival. She was one of the speakers. And I was so touched by what she had to say, her experience, vast experience, on stage, on TV, and after that to become the speaker, actually the president of NSA NYC, National Speakers Association, the premier speakers association in the country. And she was leading the New York City division for a year. And her latest endeavor is the president and founder of Motisize, M-O-T-I-C-I-S-E, Motisize.com, Fit Mind, Fit Body. And with that, here's Sonia Satra. Hey, Sonia.
Hey, how are you?
You look amazing.
Well, thank you. Likewise, it's so fun to be back here.
It is incredible how your life has sort of become full circle.
Yeah.
I mean, you started, we're going to get to your early years, but how you, just like many, many teenagers and going through adolescence and everything, had drama and issues.
Right.
And here you are, and all your, through your professional career, making it as an actress on different fronts and platforms and venues, to a speaker, a woman's empowerment person, advocate, I should say, and starting a exercise program that incorporates mind and body. We're going to talk more about that. So incredibly all over the map and successful on all fronts. And I know you're a humble person. You're not going to be like, oh, yeah, well. But it really is admirable. And you have something in you that drives you that if it was bottled would be flying off the shelves. That's for sure.
Well, thank you.
What is it that – was it something that you were born with? Because people always ask me, how are you so motivated, et cetera? Is it something that – are you afraid of success? What is it that burning flame desire inside of you that fuels you?
You know, I do have a strong desire to learn and to grow and to push the comfort zone. And I think – and I also have a really strong – and have always had a strong desire to help people and make a difference. Even when I was younger, I remember my grandmother came from Norway and she didn't speak much English. And she stayed with us for 2-3 weeks. And I was there by her side every minute just translating things and helping her. By the end, she gave me like $5, which at the time was like 5,000,
wow.
You know.
Oh, yeah,
and it was, whoa, you know, for helping her so much. And I think it was just that part perhaps I was born with. But it's grown and it's taken its, you know, it's gone in different directions as my
sure.
resume.
Yeah. Well, entertainment.
But that's at the heart of it all.
Entertainment can be a form of helping people as well.
Laughter, it is, absolutely. And also, you know, Lucy was in a rape storyline. Mm-hmm. And I think one of my most rewarding moments in acting was when I received a letter from somebody, a young girl in college who had been raped at the same time Lucy was.
Wow.
And she was following that storyline so religiously that she got help when my character got help. And I thought, wow, that is power.
So I imagine you channel that emotion absolutely. When you're on stage when a tear was required, right? Just think of that letter. Wow.
It was pretty remarkable. Pretty powerful, sure. But it made me feel really good. It made me feel like, wow, maybe I am helping somebody. Maybe I am making a difference in this really big story.
So the genesis of Moticize, MOTICISE, is probably something that was in you all your life in different forms. And obviously, the fit mind, fit body aspect of it came to you within a couple of years, last couple of years, and quickly unites mind, body, and spirit with empowering cutting edge fitness and mind focusing techniques. Do explain.
Yeah. So I'll start with the name. It's actually Moti from motivational.
Oh, Moti, I'm sorry.
And size from exercise. No, you said it right. Motisize. So,
okay.
But that's why it's MOTI. So it's motivational exercise. But it's really so much more than exercise. And, you know, many people think of mind body as yoga or Pilates, which is a phenomenal form of mind-body exercise, but this brings a mind process. You're guided through a whole process, a seven-step process, around achieving a goal that includes visualizations and affirmations, and by the end you come out with two specific action items that you can do, and it's all done while doing cardio exercise. So you actually get a kick-ass exercise, and you come out not only motivated to go achieve something in your life, but you actually come out with firm action steps to go do.
And to a certain extent, this is something you've been experiencing all your life as a enthusiast, sports enthusiast, adventurer, marathoner, triathlete.
Absolutely, absolutely. And what I didn't know, you know, it actually came to me. I was running on a treadmill watching some really bad, depressing news, and I thought, this is not inspiring at all. And I just thought, wouldn't it be great if you were, you know, prompted with something really motivational, or you could – I always use visualization and acting.
You mean skinny jeans is never a good goal?
You know, it never – yes,
short-term.
I had to.
Yeah.
Short-term.
Well,
short-term.
We all have our form of skinny jeans.
Exactly. You know, that's great, but it's not compelling enough to get me to the gym.
Mm-hmm.
But something more meaningful was, and achieving things in life and broadening my horizons was. And so I thought, wouldn't it be great if you could do that at the same time that you're exercising? Because I'll take the time to exercise.
Of course.
I don't always take that half hour or 45 minutes or hour to visualize exactly what I want in my life. So I thought, put it together, and then you've done two in one. How efficient and how powerful. And what I didn't know then, but I learned quickly after, was exercise is actually the perfect time to do that. Science has shown, there's amazing brain studies right now, that when you exercise, a protein's released in your brain. So new neural pathways are actually being created. It's called neuroplasticity, and it's created when you raise your heart rate up for a certain period of time.
How long is the time?
That varies a little bit. About a half an hour is the starting point, okay, of where you can really make mm-hmm. concrete change. And so it's not just endorphins that make you feel better. There's actually a chemical brain change that's going on, a neurological brain change that's happening. And so if you filter in images and visualizations and you open up questions to creativity, you will come up with just astounding answers that are so deep and personal and specific to you. And nobody could come up with that. And that happens while you're doing this.
And the timing of this launch is pretty essential, because all this evidence, as you just mentioned, based on Harvard University neuroscientist John Rady. Is it Rady?
Yeah, yeah. He has an amazing book called Spark.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And American College of Sports Medicine Studies. All these and many, many more. Plenty of articles in New York Times that are quantifying the significance of exercise, especially at the age of 40 and above, even if you haven't. The positive benefits of active minds.
Yes.
And also, which I'm sure you mentioned in nuances here, but we're going to talk more about that. The fact that it was always thought that brain cells never regenerated mm-hmm. is wrong.
Totally wrong.
And I knew that years ago. That's why I did so many drugs, because I knew I could just regrow these babies, man. Hydroponically, I'm doing it right now.
That's why you're doing all those spin classes.
Exactly. So let me ask you, is it difficult, and kind of paint a picture here, because if you're exercising and working out, obviously you worry about form, you worry about breathing, a lot of different things. People are worried about making an ass of themselves, how they look. I mean, it's the reality. But then with all that going on, you have to visualize. Or does that make you help you not think about all that other crap?
I think that's the beauty of it. That's the answer. Who don't like exercise have come up to me after and said, this is amazing. I didn't even think about it, because they're not thinking about, oh, I've got 10 more reps or 30 more seconds in this interval, or do I look like a jerk or whatever. You're so focused on something that's inspiring and you want in your life, meaningful in your life. Not, you know, 10 reps is 10 reps. It's not that meaningful. But something that runs deeper to you, that's true to what you really want, your core, that's motivating.
And we're going to hear a piece off your website, Motisize.com. It says a little bit about what your program's about.
Motisize is motivational exercise. So what do you need to make this goal happen? It's like goal setting and visualization and affirmations into the exercise. So you'll get a great workout and rewire your brain for success.
What prison is holding you back?
People have gotten excellent results. They've improved their relationships, they've lost weight, they've come up with new business ideas, and they've been in the best shape of their life.
What's one more action that you could take to get to that finish line?
That's what you're gonna do now. If you wanna know more, come visit us at motisize.com. We've got lots of information and resources and forums to help support you so you can achieve all of your fitness and life goals.
Whoa, nicely produced. Okay, before we get into the serious, substantial information here, I have to ask, how hard is it to shoot a video when you're exercising and smile and to talk without being out of breath?
That was a challenge.
Take 52!
Yeah, you don't want to do take 52.
Oh,
you want to get it in the first take.
Exactly. And everyone be in sync in the background. Are you watching a mirror? Can you see everything that's going on as you're filming this?
I can't. I'm facing the camera, okay. So is everybody else. So I was 100% reliant on the director, but I chose a director who had directed a number of videos, fitness videos, so he knew what he was doing, and that was a very lucky
and
thing.
And I love in a promo piece, and I picked up on this, and I'm sure it was done purposely, how you have almost light streaming through behind you.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, the lighting person was amazing. It was so funny. I had this whole vision of being in this white, airy, fluffy thing, and then, I don't know, we went and looked at sets, and somehow the set was, it was literally like a cave, but the half of the wall was literally made of rock. It was like a mountain. And I just thought, oh, how cool. There's something really natural about having
sure,
this rock.
Sure, a challenge.
Yeah,
climbing it. Yeah,
exactly. And what is that wall? And what wall are you going to overcome in your life? So it just it started to take on a whole new meaning.
So when you started this, the genesis of it, you had this concept, putting together a format, a program. Mm-hmm. How hard was that?
And a lot connecting. Harder than I thought.
That's introducing the studies, but I guess the parallelization, is that a word, parallelization or a tandem combining of the mind, thought, and the exercises must have been quite an exercise in seeing what worked and what didn't.
Yeah, there were quite a number of takes and quite a number of test groups to get that first one right, because I really wanted it to be a process. The first time I did it, it was a little random. I just took random exercise that matched mindset things. And that had its own value, but it didn't – I wanted something that somebody could do whether they were exercising or not, so that they would remember it, so that there are actually distinct pieces of the process that you can go home. I use it all the time. You know, there's just questions like, let's step into the future. What does it feel like to have already achieved it? Then what do you have? So often we'll come to a challenge and the first thing you think of is, oh yeah, but I don't have. Oh yeah, but, you know, what do you have that's already in store? Even if it's as simple as desire or a decision or a skill or a life experience, what is it that you have that you come to the table to make this goal happen? And then what do you need? And what kind of resources do you have there to help make that happen? And then what's stopping you, as you heard in the promo? And then we do a little belief burning thing. And then if you had no fear, if all of that was gone, if you really dumped all that, those stories that you tell yourself all
the
time.
You'd lose 10 pounds right away.
Yeah, right. But not only would you lose those pounds, then what would you do? And what are two action items? And then you visualize those actions. Because when you visualize it, it's really training your mind and your body for the real thing.
Have you had anyone approach you saying they would know what to do if they were free?
Not at that moment. Because by the time you've gone through the whole thing, you're much more open. And at that point, your heart rate is definitely up.
And, of course, they wouldn't be like, okay, time out. I need a therapeutic moment here.
Yeah, yeah. No, and it's I really truly believe that we all have the answers within us. They're in, and they're locked within our body, and exercise is one of the ways to unlock it, to unleash that inner power, those answers that are within us all. And at that point, you do come up with something. You really do. I haven't had anybody not.
Sonia Satra, was this developed through your own personal challenges to motivate yourself? I mean, you look great. You've been going to the gym and all these different events I spoke about for years. Did you get to a point where, like, I need more?
I'm always wanting more in my life. So I'm always seeking
more fulfillment about what you were doing to your body and or a lack of the mind-body connection, I should say.
I think all of it. Mm. You know, I think I'm always just striving to pull it together and to find ways to just be better in all areas of my life. And, you know, I used to use something like this, didn't call it motorized, but back in my acting days, I used to run. There was a canyon in Santa Monica that I used to run up. And as I was running, I would say affirmations. And then when I got to the top, I would, and by then my heart rate was definitely pumping, I would yell out what it was that I wanted to achieve, have achieved, and hear it echo back. So it was like, you got that part. You got that part.
Lucy,
you got that part.
President.
You got that part. Yeah.
There you go.
And it was such an empowering thing. And I'd, you know, run back down and feeling all good. And I could
cue
go
music,
off.
Go to black.
Exactly.
Sounds like a movie. I love it.
Right. So I think it was in an interesting way something I utilized before without really knowing why, and here it just formalized it and made it into a process that everybody could use.
Now, at a very young age, you had the pleasure, maybe it's a pleasure, maybe looking back as a pleasure, but not at the time, of traveling a lot of the world and living abroad. But you had some dark times, as a lot of adolescents have had and are having now and will ever forever have, because that's part of being an adolescent. Tell me about some of those, because it developed into a eating disorder.
Yes, I did. We did travel, which was wonderful. But there was one particular summer I was in Denmark with my mom alone. She was working on her dissertation. So I spent most of my days by myself touring Copenhagen.
At the age of
12.
Oof.
Yeah, it's pretty young. I look at my 11-year-old and
they don't have Dreyfus in Copenhagen.
Yeah, no, I know. And I don't think you could do that. I don't think she would do that now. Now she's still like, I can't believe I did that.
She was younger and freer.
Yeah, and it was a different world, thankfully.
Sure.
But yeah, so I think having a little too much time on my hands to be in my own head, I just started to, I don't know, implode, I guess. And I think anorexia, control of eating, is a form of control. So when your life feels out of control, which at an adolescent, being alone in a foreign city all by myself all day long, I did feel a little out of control. So this was something that was manageable. I could take care of. I could control what I ate and how much I ate and how much I burned and exercise and all the rest of that. And unfortunately, it just took it to an extreme, and it became a
serious
disease.
Issue, sure. Yeah. Was this a way for you to say to your mom, like, I don't want to be here, I'm not happy? And you weren't even intellectually allowed or able to process it.
Yeah, I think it. In hindsight, it was definitely a call for help. I wanted her so badly to believe that I was happy because I didn't want to impede on her work. I knew getting this dissertation done was important to her. And so I just thought, if I could just be happy, if I could just look happy, and then everything's going to be okay. And she's going to get this done and it's all going to be good.
Early acting skills.
Yeah, exactly. And so, yeah, sadly, I'd be in bed crying at night. But in the day, I had a good face, you know, but internally, all this was going on.
So flash forward to years later when you, I believe, come home from college.
Yeah.
And your sister?
Well, she had come home from college. So it was towards the end of high school. So it went on for a number of years. And that was about my lowest point, where I had reached about 80 pounds and I was losing my hair. And
at a healthy weight, you were what back then?
About 105, 110.
Okay.
It was about
25 pounds down. That's a lot for that size.
It's a fair amount for that size. 80 pounds was starting to impact the rest of my health. And
any communication with your mother or any help?
She was desperately
then?
Trying, and she was at that point. I was moments. She was investigating where to take me because, other bodily functions weren't working properly, and it was starting to impact my immune system. And she knew this was a problem, and she tried everything in the book, from buying really good food, healthy food, to buying junk food, hoping that, you know, here, eat a Twinkie,
sure,
like it tastes good. And she would try to monitor what I would eat, and she, you know, I mean, she really, really tried everything, and I feel for her, because putting myself in her position, I don't really know what she could have done, because once you get into that intense mind space, you know, you just think the world is against you, you know, and I felt like everything she did was some act at trying to make me fatter. And so, yeah, but then my sister came home, and yeah, it was one powerful day, and she just looked at me, and she's like, what are you doing to yourself? And she dragged me into the bathroom and put me on a scale, and that's when it was, you know, just hitting that 80-pound mark. I think it was really more like 79, and she just looked at me, and she was like, what are you trying to kill yourself, you know? And I think that coming from my sister, who I was so close to, I was never trying to kill myself. You know, I could still get emotional. I can't believe it. I've told this story a few times now, and it's still like, ah. But that was not ever my intention. And to have her really pinpoint it, and to think that that was what I was actually doing, was scary, you know. And it just took on a whole new meaning from her. And the thought that she might leave me in some capacity because of this was also terrifying. And so it was a real turning point. It took a lot of years to really change, but I at least got to 95 pounds, and I stuck to that for a really long time, because somehow that seemed thin enough, but not unhealthy.
Sure. People won't think I'm obese at 95.
Exactly. And so I was, but so it was still, the control factor was there for a lot of years, but at least the physical impact wasn't so bad.
Any genetic predispositions for this?
I don't know. I know that I've read a lot now that they're saying that there are some genetic predispositions for this. I don't know of any in my past. My poor daughter, I watch her like a hawk. I try to scare her, like, you don't want to kill yourself with this.
You don't want to smother her either.
Hopefully it doesn't go
right,
the
huh?
other way around.
Yeah, exactly.
I know. I have to find that balance. But I am aware that that is a possibility.
How much is this of your part of a life, of your lifestyle now, in terms of what you eat, how often, et cetera, and monitoring it?
I think I have finally gotten to a place where I've really learned to listen to my body. You know, I do eat healthy. Nutrition and is a hugely important part of my life. I really believe that it's hard to have a clear mind, and it's hard to achieve if you're eating Twinkies, and, you know, it makes you feel lousy, and you're tired, and it can, you know, make you feel depressed and sluggish, and
so
all sorts of things.
So when I was in Disney World a week and a half ago, eating all that crap for 5 days in a row, that's why I felt like shit?
You know, I'm just thinking, maybe that
maybe
could have
it's the
a
big mouse ears as well I'm not into, but yeah.
On the other hand, I'm also not at the point where I'm like, you can't have that cookie, you know what I mean?
Sure.
Because I've done that, and that sets off a whole nother set
absolutely.
Of
absolutely. You have
so
to live.
You got to live. You know, 80-20. You make 80% healthy, and then, you know,
like
you
it.
Can take that 20%.
I take that 20% on the weekends. And it has a cork in a bottle.
And yeah, and you could try to modify some of those 22 and try to make them a little healthier. But
so how did acting become part of Sonia Sacha's goals?
That was a, you know, kind of a mistake, I think. It was a good detour in my life.
A very successful mistake.
Yeah.
It was
not
a soap opera. Okay, wish I didn't do that.
It was not something I thought of. It wasn't as if I acted during school and I was in every star of every school play. I had looked at modeling, I think, in my obsession over food and nutrition and exercise. That was something that kind of looked glamorous. And when I was in college, I thought, well, maybe I'll do some part-time modeling just to make some extra money. And a photographer saw me playing tennis with my mom and asked if I would do this hair ad. And I was like, yeah, that's fun. And so I did that, and that really kind of opened up the Pandora's box, I guess.
Did that give you more confidence with your weight issue? Concern, focus?
You know, yes and no.
Because then you're worried about
it. Yeah, because then you start to worry.
Sure.
And then, of course, now you're modeling.
Is
and, of course, you're on camera.
Put 10 pounds on
and
me?
It does. And so, yeah, you've got – so there were ebbs and flows within that period of time where it became more of an obsession, less of an obsession. But, yeah, eventually I ended up at this commercial agency, not even knowing they were a commercial agent, thinking they were print, and read a little copy. And they thought, yeah, you're really good. Would you like to do this? And sure. So I went out, just say yes, I think has been my motto in life. Say yes, figure it out after.
It'll all come together.
Exactly. And I was lucky. I booked my first commercial.
What was it?
It was for A&P, a grocery store.
That's great.
Yeah. And then
national.
After that, I became the fast food queen. Isn't that ironic? All this health and everything. And I did like every fast food commercial you could do. Burger King, McDonald's,
and
Pizza
when's the last
Hook,
time you
Kentucky
had a burger
Fried
from
Chicken.
Any one of those places?
It's about
20
then.
Years?
Yes,
yeah.
Maybe 25 by now.
I think I'm actually up there. I think the last time I had a burger from any fast food place or where you get gas, it's probably been about 20, 25 years.
Yeah.
I'll go for fries because that's the 20 part.
That's the 20.
On the turnpike, or you're going on a family trip, you need some caffeine and some, you know, salted fries to keep you going. And then you can lick your steering wheel a week later and be like, oh, yeah, that's right. I had fries. But it's great. You know, you succeeded. And at what point did you say, obviously, the soap industry was changing, just like radio changed, digital age. When did you say, you know what? I think this is enough.
You know, I think it was that sort of was a process in itself, too. When I was pregnant, I was a little more on a hiatus because there weren't a ton of roles for pregnant women. And I wasn't on the soap at that point. And so, but I wanted to do something. And that was when I got into coaching. I had always had a coach before people even knew what a coach was. And
Life coach,
yeah. And I thought, and I was sort of that person that my friends would come to for advice and would talk to and just was good at listening. And
can I interrupt you for 1 second?
Sure.
When you were on stage being Lucy Cooper, did you have a cell phone back then? If you
did
you just turn
that?
It off? I had a bunch of chops about this.
Thanks. Sorry,
okay.
That was mine.
Fine piano jazz in the back. Do continue, Sonia Satra.
Yeah. Where was I?
Oh, it doesn't matter.
I don't even know.
So you did that. It was a time where you had your children.
I had my
times
children,
were
and
changing.
I ended up getting certified as a life coach. Mm-hmm. And then when I had my daughter, I went back to acting, but I was still life coaching. And then I learned speaking was a
helping
career.
Helping people again.
And I was really liking it, and especially being out in front of an audience. It seemed to bridge the gap between the acting and the coaching. And so I started to do more speaking, more coaching. And, yeah, I really loved that sort of that one-on-one and seeing people transform was really, really exciting.
And fascinating enough, I should say, we picked up the phone at one point, and we were both going into speaking.
Yeah, exactly.
5 years ago or 4 years ago.
Right. Didn't even know you were going to do it.
Isn't that interesting?
Uh-huh.
How, and my world was changing. Radio was changing. The digital, internet radio was like, you know, very, very much in its infancy.
But like you, probably you have some desire to communicate something that information and help people, like give them something that they may not know that can make a difference in their lives. And this is a great forum to do it, as is speaking.
I had someone come up to me very quickly, a sidebar here last week, a high school student, after speaking to 2,000 kids, about a handful came up after a Q&A. I said, basically I say to them, if you want to talk to me without putting all your material out there for everyone else to hear, come up to me afterwards. I'll be here for a few minutes. And the kid said to me, I tried to take my life a few times. Mm-hmm. And he started crying. And a big, big guy, you wouldn't think of it. Obviously, mental health doesn't takes down everybody, I should say. It's not I've been up since 4 o'clock.
Words.
Yeah, exactly. They're just words. Anyway,
mental health comes in all shapes and sizes.
Absolutely, it does. And he was very, very emotional, very, very inspired by what I had to say, and just wanted to wonder how I got through in more of a, I guess, personal way of through my rough times of personal mental health.
Yeah.
And it was just great to see. And someone else just came out to me and just said, listen, I'm a senior. I'm graduating in 7 months, as you were kind of preparing us for. And how do you stay so positive? So all these different ways and components, just like yourself, through Motisize, through your speaking endeavor. And by the way, we can't just gloss over that, because you became a speaker. And then within 2 or 3 years became president of the New York City chapter of the largest speakers association, National Speakers Association of America. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah, that was that was another one of say yes and figure it out after.
Yeah, a lot of work, right?
It was a lot of work, but very rewarding. Speakers are great people.
They are, and very, very helpful.
Helpful and passionate about what they do.
Mm. And very much so where it led you to believe that, and something that you believe very close and dear to your heart that you held to for many years about empowering women.
Yes. Yeah.
Talk about that, please.
Well, I think, you know, I think the world is changing at this point, and women are in a different, at least women in America are in a very different place. I think the younger generation don't necessarily view themselves as not equal to men in the same way that perhaps our generation and ones before us were. And I think that's great. I think that is an example of where
Absolutely.
We've come. Unfortunately, the world as a whole is not necessarily that mm-hmm. way. There's still plenty of places
sure.
where women aren't equal by any stretch. And yet studies show when women do have powers, when women step up into places of leadership, we can really change. We can make positive, impactful change for the world at large. Women have a slightly different viewpoint of things. We're much more mothers at heart, you know, and I think we look at what we do impacts the world in a very positive way.
And I think a key word, sorry for interrupting there, Sonia, is that you said viewpoint. And I think that's so invaluable to have viewpoints on any different project, whether it's professionally related, personal life. I mean, that's what you want, input.
Yes.
We all need help in this life.
Absolutely.
No matter what
we all do.
New endeavors.
New endeavors. And
radio program, whatever the case may be.
Yeah. And I think we need equal input from both men and women. Men are phenomenal people, and they're like masters at getting stuff
done.
You've
never said that before.
They are. No, I.
Hey, listen, we're almost
some
out of time.
Men,
yeah, exactly.
But,
some men.
But you need the balance of a woman.
Yes,
you really, really do.
Tell me very quickly. You still have focused and on empowering in women, and Modicize is exclusively for both genders.
Yes, it
okay?
is.
It's not
See?
Just for women, but you do out. Have something coming up on February 6th, I believe, a trapeze event.
Yes, this is something I did before as women's empowerment events. Now it's coming back as a Modi event, so guys can do it too. And it's a workshop around letting go, and then we will do a trapeze where you actually get to embody what it feels like to let go. So it's
with
again another mind.
Net included?
Net, yeah. Hey, it depends how much you want to let go.
Yeah. Maybe you're one and only time to let go and last. Is there something on your website about a free welcome kit?
There is a free welcome kit. So if you can go, there's a great visualization about visualizing a future vision, something that you'd like to really accomplish in your life. And then there's a wonderful ebook that can help guide you through with the different questions that can help inspire thoughts and help you take action.
And of course, on your website, MOTICISE.com, you have information about obviously that event, the event happening on February 6th, and also different locations where you can actually take Modicize, and also DVDs available on your website as well.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure, where's your t-shirts? I don't get a Modicize t-shirt today?
I got one for you.
All right. Good. My name is Mark Farrell. Thank you so much to Sonia Satra, my guest today, and also to Zane Burney, budding comedian. I wish you could have seen him the other night, laugh or sight. I should have invited you.
Uh-oh.
Oh, well. Anyway, this show and all podcasts are available on PRN.FM. Make sure you check out Adele. She's got a great new single, and she's going to be appearing on SNL this Saturday night. My name is Mark Farrell. Have a great Friday Eve. Talk to you soon.